I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing with Professor James Robb, his new book, Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece. We last left the unhappy family of the Dionysians with the brother-in-law, Dion, brother-in-law and brother-in-law, raising an army to invade Sicily to take Syracuse, the powerful state of Syracuse, fleet, army, conquest, ambitions, expansionism, to take it away from Dionysus II, who's about 10 years younger, and a complete tyrant, as we believe it here in the 21st century. The word tyrant had some meaning of different texture in the 4th century BCE when we're watching. Plato is also watching. Plato's made 3 visits to Syracuse, this powerful state, like visiting Moscow or Washington as a philosopher. And the 3rd visit, he was there to plead the case of Dion, who he may or may not know is raising an army. Well, the army gets raised. There's an invasion fleet. They're closing on the island. Maybe Dionysus is ready, maybe he's not. The winds make it not immediately charging affair, but they eventually get there and land. Dion is now the leader of a liberation force. And the question is, what does he plan to do? Because he's been a student of Plato. He converses with Plato. Plato's back in his academy in Athens, where he'll spend the rest of his life, I believe. But the events of Syracuse now have a logic of themselves, if you've read Shakespeare. We're in that part where the knives come out. Professor, this is a wonderful story, except for at this point, I got lost in the blood and confusion. What it does remind me of, James, is every revolution I've been through recently. I'm thinking of Bonaparte's, yes, of course, but the Paris Commune, for example, with the Prussians outside bombarding as inside they keep changing leadership and people in charge and people not, or the Russian Revolution, how the first wave of success is followed by a second wave of defeat, and then here comes this character Lenin from out of nowhere. So it's as if we've been replaying this drama for 2,500 years. Does it strike you as a classicist that we're all building our lives on the infrastructure that you've created in Greece?
In some ways, yes. The parallels are quite striking to the episodes that you've mentioned. I think, human nature has certain constant features over time, and one of them is that when a people that's been oppressed by an autocracy are suddenly liberated, that all kinds of passions come to the surface and the public can become very impatient for sudden and radical change. And that, of course, leads to factional splits and often to chaos, as was true in Syracuse.
Yes. Now, Dion has reason to believe that he's going to be welcomed, and he is, by the Syracusans, because they've been oppressed by this reckless person, Dionysus II. However, I pause here because Dion has learning. He's a mature person at the same time. He knows everybody. He has allies, and one of those allies is the fleet commander, Heraclitus. Heraclides or Heraclitus, which is it?
Heraclides,
who is, at first when you introduced him to me, I thought, well, we've got a Marcus Agrippa. That was Octavian's greatest tool to win, to become Augustus, was Marcus Agrippa, his fleet commander. Except for Dion, has he deceived us all the time? He's the secret tyrant. Did he deceive Plato because he acts so badly?
Well, I don't know how badly he acts. He certainly tries to act well and to form a pluralistic government in which he is not the sole authority, and to give the people some but not all of what they want for their new regime. The problem is that, as I mentioned, the passions that were unleashed by the revolution were white hot. And Heraclides, as a radical Democrat, radical populist, was able to channel those passions and build support for himself.
He was a Trotsky figure, is what he became.
That's a good analogy, yes, indeed.
And he was very effective, and he would have been a great commander. Now, 400 years later, 500 years later, the first century AD, a man named Plutarch, educated, grows up under Nero. That didn't teach him much, and probably a little Claudius when he was a baby. But then Nero dies, the year of four emperors, and here comes Domitian and Vespasian and Titus, the Flavians. So Plutarch is learning what can go wrong with an empire. Augustus is having his achievements abused by his successors, by the Julian-Claudian reign, first century AD, and then by the Flavian. However, eventually we'll get a good king out of this, a good emperor out of this Hadrian. But Plutarch has motives. And you made me very suspicious of Plutarch. Plutarch writes a book that we know as Lives. And Dion is in one of his lives. And just like Plato, Plutarch wants to like Dion. Why? And what did they find in there that makes Dion the hero?
Well, we have to understand that Plutarch was educated as a Platonist.
Right.
He was trained by the inheritors of Plato's Academy some four and a half centuries after that institution was founded, and was a great admirer of Plato and wrote dialogues himself in the Platonic manner. So his attitude towards Dion is deeply colored by his respect for Plato, his desire to see the best in Plato's protege and the person that really represented Platonic values in his political career.
So they thought Dion was a Democrat? How did they regard him? I'm talking about first century AD and into the second century. I'm not talking about us, because Plutarch becomes an echo of Plato, actually bigger than an echo. He gives us a melodrama.
Mm-hmm. Yes. He portrays Dion in glowing terms as the philosopher king that might have been, and we can talk about what happened to prevent that.
He had Heraclides assassinated. That's when he lost my attention.
Yes. So he committed a political murder to eliminate his rival, and that caused even Plutarch grave difficulties. Plato, interestingly, omits the episode from all of his accounts of what happened in Syracuse, because it was a huge embarrassment to the Academy.
The Academy is involved in this. Wasn't Callippus a student of the Academy? I think so.
Indeed. And although Plato does his best to obscure that fact, but Dion's assassin was another student of Plato.
What is this, Oxford going over to the Germans? What is Plato protecting? Is the Academy have a rival out there? He looks like he's always buffing up the Academy worth of his Academy. Plutarch, does he do the same thing? In other words, are they protecting the Academy more than Dion?
Both at the same time, because Dion was, of course, a standard bearer for the Academy. So to burnish the reputation of Dion is also to protect the reputation of the Academy. And yes, there were rival schools. A man named Isocrates, who deeply disliked Plato's approach, was making his own outreach to the regime in Syracuse, as well as to other autocracies around the Greek world.
Dion is successful to a point, and he becomes the dictator of Syracuse after hemming and hawing and much drama. But his success leads to assassination. And how did that happen? What kind of ruler was he compared to Dionysius II, who escapes, is in the citadel? Why did the not nobodies, but why did the crowd rise up and assassinate Dion?
Well, it wasn't the crowd so much as a faction of his own army. Apparently, after he committed this murder, the killing of his rival, he went into a kind of depression and ceased to care. He apparently even offered that anyone who wanted could slit his throat. So he had some kind of spiritual crisis that made him ineffective. And one of his subalterns, his generals, just split off a section of the army that was disaffected and had them commit the killing of Dion.
It reminds me very much of the assassination of the Tsar's family. It was done very badly. They didn't think it through. They had to make a man on the street, give them a weapon to kill him. My goodness. There were Nero. Remember how Nero couldn't get himself killed, so he kept asking people. Finally, his servant helped him. That's what this reminded me of. All right, Dion's dead. And there's a new dictator, a series of new dictators in Syracuse. And Syracuse has burned severally times. It's getting reduced all the time. People fleeing the city. There's food insecurity. Everything's gone wrong in this most powerful of city-states, which doesn't displease people. And remember now, Dionysius II is still on the scene. He hasn't left. He's going to assert himself one more time. And when we come back, his fate is unpredictable. I had no guess whatsoever matching up with what really happens. James Rahm is the book. Remember, Plato's watching all of this. Plato and the Tyrant, The Fall of Greece's Greatest Dynasty and the Making of a Philosophic Masterpiece, The Republic. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.